Welcome, everyone, to the Multiple Takes podcast. I am one of our hosts, Jacob, and this is...
My name is Graham. Excited to be here with you, Jake.
I'm excited to be here with you, too. You ready to talk about what seems to be the most controversial movie of 2025?
I'm very ready to talk about Snow White. we both saw this, I think, last week, and I've been excited to talk about it.
When did you see it? Did you see it on...
I think I saw it last Monday.
Last Monday.
So it's been like a week.
Yeah, I saw it on Friday. So I think I have a little bit... Maybe I have it a little bit more fresher in my mind.
Yeah, I've definitely thought about it a lot since then, but I don't know if the things I've thought have been good, you know?
Well, I know that this movie is gotten every negative review that ever could be. And so I'm one of those guys, you know me well enough to know I'm a little bit more of an optimistic person. So I tried to go in with an open mind, also expecting that I might hate it. But I think we should talk about the positives starting out. What about you?
We can talk about the positives. You might have to carry that one because I don't have very many positives. But
okay, do you want to go first? Do you want me to go first?
Go for it. Just get us right into it.
Okay. So for me, positives about Snow White. Look, it's a live action remake. Everybody has their thoughts about live action remakes in general. But I always try to go in with any movie with an open mind, even if I think the trailers don't look good and it has so much baggage coming in with it, which this movie definitely did. I will say, I actually thought the acting for the most part overall was actually pretty good. I thought everybody came in, really seemed like they did the best they could with what they had. And I thought that they did a good job in general, not just with, oh, it was the best they could. No, it seemed like they really... each of them tried to give their all in what they were doing. And I also thought that the music, for the most part, again, you're going to hear me say that a lot about this movie, but for the most part, actually, I thought was really well done, especially, and it was something I was worried about with the newer songs they were going to have. The first song, like the first, I guess it's like 5 to 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Particularly with that first song, and you see... Snow White as a young girl and her parents and the values they're trying to instill in her. I'm like, you know what? I'm actually liking this part. This is actually, it weirdly works. What's going on here? This is not what I expected at the beginning. But yeah, I thought that was good. I'm trying to think of what else positive.
It's interesting that you talk about the music, because that was probably the biggest question I had. Like, I was the thing I was most interested to hear your take on was the music, because I know you're a musical guy, and I don't hate musicals. I think they're fine if they're good, and I think they're bad if they're bad. But yeah, like the songs for me were kind of, other than the first one was pretty good. The rest of the songs kind of fluctuated between forgettable and like, mm-hmm. They were definitely kind of towards the end where like every time we got to a new scene, it was like, and now we've got to sing about what we're doing. And like,
yeah,
I definitely like had a couple of like, oh, give me a break. Like towards the end. But I like, yeah, the thing that I noticed was that, and this, I don't know if this was a surprise to me or not, but I like the best songs for me were all of the old songs. And they actually did, like, I was kind of surprised that they did a good job and maybe even, like, an improvement. Like, I thought Hi-Ho was really good.
And oh, I totally agree.
I was kind of surprised that it, like, I don't know, that it hit as good as it did. It had some, like, extra harmony stuff going on, and I was like, this is kind of rocks. Like, this is kind of good. And then the Whistle While You Work, like, incorporating the Seven Dwarfs into that.
Honestly, yeah.
Was also, like, it worked. It was fine. I didn't have a problem with it.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Yeah.
But like the rest of the music for me was, yeah, somewhere between like forgettable and like, oh, are we really singing another song in this scene? Are we really
singing another one? I will say this, like kind of finishing out my positives and that. Like I I thought, again, like I said, overall, I thought the music was good. I have some thoughts negative-wise on some of it, especially some of the newer ones. But yeah, I thought that was good. Every time I thought, I was like, ah, this doesn't work. I actually thought, and I haven't watched, I don't know about you, but I haven't watched the original Snow White in a long time.
I watched it last week in preparation for this podcast. I did my homework.
Dang it. Well, I failed.
I can talk about my feelings about the original Snow White, but yeah, after we talk about this one. But
I will say this, though. Like, I actually, despite all the bad stuff I kept hearing, the beginning and, like, I thought the acting overall, again, like I said, was good. The music, I thought, overall was good. And I was trying, there was one other thing I was going to say on it. I even liked, like, the opening, the way they did the opening and ending was kind of like how they did the remake of The Jungle Book. And I even think the original Jungle Book, but like they opened a book to start it. And I actually kind of liked that they started it that way. It was a kind of nice feel to it.
They do that in the original Snow White as well. I think it starts with like a opening of a book.
Opening of a book. Yeah. So like those little things that could have gone just like, really, why are we doing this? I actually thought some of them were really good. I even thought the chemistry, especially between the prince,
Jonathan.
Jonathan and Snow White was pretty good. I don't know how well they do it in the original, but I actually thought they did a pretty good job with how they were doing things. There's some stuff connected with him that I also didn't like, but we'll get into that in a minute.
Yeah,
but
well, I guess
that's my positives.
I guess like I can kind of talk about the original since I did see it pretty recently. I'm not a huge fan of the original personally. But I can say, like, when it comes to the prince in the original, the dude was, like, he was barely in it. Like, he's at the very beginning, there's a scene where Snow White's like, I want the perfect man. Oh, look, there he is. It's the prince. And then, like, the whole movie happens, and then she dies. Spoiler alert, I guess, for Snow White. If you haven't seen the movie, it's 85 years old. I would recommend checking it out. But, like, and then at the end, she dies. And then it's like, oh, here's the prince again. Like. And he kisses. I don't even know if he has, like, they never have dialogue. I think he, like, in the opening song in the original, he, like, sings a line and it kind of startles her and she runs away. But I don't think he and her ever, like, talk to each other in the original movie. Like, the story in the original movie is pretty bare bones. And after watching it and then going and watching the new one, I wasn't super mad that they added some of the stuff that they added. Like, because I think if they hadn't added it, it would have felt like really like there's nothing there. Cause in the original, like 75% of that movie is her like hanging out with the dwarves and it kind of gets old pretty quick, at least for me. Yeah. I know a lot of people like it, but it's not one that speaks to me on a really deep level or anything.
Well, I would say too, like, I mean, that's what you're supposed to do with a remake. You want to have some of those very powerful, impactful moments, poignant, you know, parts of the story, of the plot, but you also want to add some things that actually make it better in some ways that in which the original may have failed. And so.
Yeah, and I like Rachel Ziegler, I know she made a lot of comments about that, and like that's going back into like the controversy. And
yeah,
like, she talked about like how the original story was like dated or whatever. I don't think she did a great job at articulating what she meant. But I think going back and watching it, and then going back and watching the new one, like I get what she's saying, and I think that she's right about like this is a new story and it's kind of told in a new way. And it's not like it's the same story, but not really. And that wasn't something that bothered me, but I know like as part of the many, like it feels like every different crowd that exists in the world has been upset about this film in some way. And the like Disney fans that were like, we love Snow White. We want to go see Snow White. And then Rachel Ziegler's like, this is different. Like that's just one of the groups that got upset. One of the only like major positives I have with the film is that, and not to focus too much on the controversy, But in a world that feels so like everything's black and white, this or that, left and right, whatever you want to say, like this movie managed to unite everybody. And they did it because nobody was happy about this movie. Like, yeah, like people are either mad at Gal Gadot or they're mad at Rachel Zegler or they're mad at the fact that there are CGI dwarves or the fact that they're like, we're going to be real dwarves or like, or people are mad because the movie just isn't that good. Like, I don't know. Like, but it kind of united the world for a little bit there. And I, you know, that's
so your positive is, hey, the world got united against.
It's a rare moment of, I feel like, of unity in our world where everybody kind of had, everybody was on the same side on this one. nobody was excited about it. Nobody wanted it.
Oh man,
that's maybe a really sad positive, but that's all I've got.
Well, I mean, I get what you're saying. That I will say this though. I mean, from what I saw, and I can even look it up right now. From what I remember of the box office, it didn't do well.
No, opening. It didn't.
I think
do
it was
great.
43 million, 42 something million, which for a 200 something million dollar movie, I think that's not good.
Yeah, but it also like I don't know like that budget because it kind of was in like this like production purgatory for a while where because wasn't it supposed to come out like 2 years ago or something and then. They like re-edited everything and it kind of feels in some ways like they had something and they re-edited it. Like the whole Band of Thieves kind of gang, it kind of just felt like kind of thrown in and like it wasn't really necessary. Like I understand the whole like they want to have some sort of plot with her and the love interest Jonathan, but like the whole like group of thieves feels super like kind of shoehorned in, like it didn't need to be there and it was kind of thrown in last minute and I don't know.
It literally did two things. They distracted at one point and shot a knife out of the Evil Queen's hand. Like
yeah, at the very end, yeah.
By the way, spoiler alert, we're going to talk about this movie in depth.
Spoilers for Snow White. I don't know that anybody's really like, the movie's been out for a week and I think everybody that wanted to see it's probably seen it.
That's true.
Which wasn't many people.
we're kind of moving into it, but it's fair. I mean, I think both of us have a lot of negatives with this movie, but I honestly think I agree with you with it because it feels like the seven thieves.
Yeah.
Were supposed to be the focus and they did. And look, I'll say this, until the thieves came in, I actually felt like the whole movie felt like it was on the right track, getting to where it was supposed to be. And then they come in, and I'm like, wait a minute, something feels like it was edited out. I don't know what it was. And even them being around the dwarves and everything, it just seemed like it was out of nowhere. So I'm wondering if they had their original idea was instead of Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, it was Snow White and the Seven Thieves. Which
almost like because they did that Snow White and the Huntsman movie. I mean, that was like a decade ago or so, but like that had like, I want to be careful in the way that I say this. That had like normal sized people as the seven, whatever you want to call them, the huntsmen or whatever they were in that movie. Like, and so I think maybe they were trying to do like a, this is the seven, the group of seven, whatever you wanted to call them in the movie. But then like there was the whole Peter Dinklage thing about like, I don't really know. There was all sorts of controversy about the dwarves, and then like Peter Dinklage wanted them to not use dwarves, and then like I know Jason Acuna.
He didn't want them to make it at all. I think.
Yeah, and then like they go like CGI dwarves, and then Jason Acuna, aka Wee Man, is like that's the roles you should be giving to the like people with dwarfism. So that's another one of the controversies. Speaking of the dwarfs, though, I wanted to ask you about what you thought of, like, their place in the story, specifically Dopey's place in the story, because he had way more, like, there was way more of him than in the original. In the original, he was just kind of there. But yeah. In this one, like, it was like there was like a character development moment. Like, what did you think of that?
I honestly, so with the dwarves and everything, you know, despite all the CGI and stuff like that, I honestly kind of forgot about it. You know, I knew it was CGI, kind of forgot about it after it kept going, after they were on the screen.
Yeah.
Because Hi-Ho was the introducing of them, and it got me so into it, I honestly didn't care about them being CGI or not. So, but but at the same time, there's all that controversy. But yeah. I will say this, like with Dopey, honestly, probably one of the best parts of the movie.
Interesting.
Seeing, well, in my opinion, just seeing how they gave some of the CGI, whatever you want to call it, magical creatures is what they, I think they decided to call it, but people with dwarfism, whatever. I'm sorry, it's just like one of those things. Like, but. With the characters, they gave Doc personality, it felt like. They gave Grumpy personality. And they gave, Sleepy and Dopey personality. Every one of the other ones, I don't even remember half of their names. I mean, they had one sneeze a couple times. It just didn't work. I actually liked that they gave Dopey a little bit of something to care about these characters, but again, it kind of took away from it a little bit when they completely left them and they were gone for a while.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I both loved what they did and trying to get him to come out of his shell kind of thing. Yeah. He was also dopey, but he was also had a heart and that. And I really, it was like, oh man, that's a great moment when he spoke for the first time.
See that? So that like resonated with you emotionally?
It resonated with me emotionally. It felt good to see from the way they were portraying Dopey. Like, it felt like he had somewhat of an arc in that moment.
See, I think you and I had the opposite reaction there, because when he spoke, had I not been in the Alamo Draft House where they would kick you out for talking, I would have like audibly been like, come on. Like, it was so funny. Like, I did laugh. And
Okay.
It was just like, I don't know, like it just didn't. I think part of it's because like we were introduced to Dopey, he's kind of shy or whatever. Then we go away with all the like thief, huntsman, whatever you want to call them, the other group, and then we like kind of come back for the climax, and then Dopey's like, it didn't feel earned. Like it just felt like, Oh, now it's the time for the guy that wasn't able to talk now, and like give us some sort of climactic moment, and it like it didn't work for me, and so I'm glad it worked for you, but it missed me on that one, I guess.
Well, I mean, no, I get what you're saying in that too. Like I think the reason why it worked was you could tell they were at least trying to give him some personality and arc versus some of the characters of the dwarves, of the magical creatures. They were their character from the animated and nothing else.
Yeah, and and even in the animated one, like nobody in the animated movie is really much like has much of like character development, or like there's no one has an arc. Snow White is always just this like, she's the perfect princess that can do no wrong. The evil queen is evil, and the prince is just like the like eye candy for Snow White or whatever, and then the dwarves are literally like their name is their entire like the entire list of every character trait they have. So like, I mean, I can appreciate that they were trying to like dig a little deeper and try to give a little bit more of like characters and development to these characters, because there really was nothing in the original in terms of development or even like learning motivations other than the queen's motivation. She wants to be the fairest of them all. Like that's the one character that has like, I don't know. It kind of makes sense why they do what they do, but everybody else is just kind of there.
Let's talk about the evil queen for a second.
Okay. I'm interested to know what your thoughts are.
Different thoughts on it. so I like, Gal Gadot, I think that's how you say her last name.
Yeah.
for the most part as an actress in the few things I've seen her in. I think that she's great in Wonder Woman. Both, even though the second one I think is not good. But I had heard before going in that she kind of almost overperforms as the Evil Queen a lot.
Interesting.
When watching the movie.
Okay.
And I went in and I was like, again, trying to go in just open mind, watch the movie, how the movie is, all that kind of stuff. I could see it a little bit. There would be moments where she would do it, and then there are moments she wouldn't. Also, the Evil Queen song was my least favorite of the whole bit of new music. I think that was a new song.
Yeah, definitely a new song.
It would not work.
I don't remember it at all.
But yeah, no, and I didn't like talking about like characters who had an arc. As I'm thinking about it now, literally her whole arc, which I get, it's from the original, so it makes the sense. It's like she just wants to be the fairest of them all. She constantly just wants to be the fairest. That's the only thing she cares about.
Right.
I'm trying to think. I don't know. I didn't care for her at all. Like, it felt like they were giving her something. I honestly thought, after watching the movie, thinking, oh, so she sent her husband off to war. It seemed like, oh, he's gonna die. And then it seemed like they were setting it up, oh, he's actually maybe alive somewhere. And they just didn't know it, and I thought, okay. But it, I don't know, they just kept doing this. It just didn't work for me. She was fine at the beginning. When she died in the movie, I was like, okay, is that how the original happened? I don't know. I don't remember. I just didn't. She probably was the least interesting. No, she wasn't the least interesting. She was like the second to last the least interesting characters for me. The thieves were actually the least interesting to me. But
I think I almost wonder if she had too much screen time and that made her less interesting. Maybe. Like, I think there's something to say about like the villain that you don't see that like is like, so I think about like Star Wars and like the original trilogy, how like you never see the Emperor until like the very end of Return of the Jedi. And it's like, right. Holy crap, this, like, that's the guy. Whereas, like, in this one, like, she's got her song and she's got, like, so much time on screen that, like, I don't know, she loses some of that mystique. I think in the original one, like, there's way less Evil Queen. Like, she's just kind of, like, I don't know, like, yeah, there's just way less, like, she doesn't have a song. She doesn't have, like, much to do until it's, like...
There's a looming threat, but
you kind of know she's there, and like even though you don't see her, there's like it's more, I don't know, more intimidating and kind of more, I don't know, maybe even scary, like the fact that she's just kind of looming in the background and you don't see much of her, you don't hear much from her, but like you know what her motivation is, you know what she's gonna do. I don't know. I think they gave her too much. It was just too much Evil Queen.
Let me ask you this, okay?
Okay.
You kind of mentioned it a little bit. You know, we talked a little bit about, a little bit, I don't think a whole lot, about Snow White and the prince, Jonathan. But yeah. I did want to actually hear your thoughts more on the thieves, because they're barely in the movie, and yet they're supposed to feel like they're a huge presence when they're not. And they were honestly my least favorite characters in the movie because they did two things. Like I said, became a distraction and shot a knife out of someone's hand, and that was it. That was their whole arc.
Yeah, I mean, like I said earlier, like it feels like the thieves were just kind of like... it feels like they were a victim of like someone had a plan at some point, and then it got to the editing room and that plan may have changed or whatever it was. But like... Yeah, they're like you said, like they're a distraction in one scene, and then they like they kind of have this like little heroic moment at the end, and the one mm-hmm. guy with the crossbow is like,
oh my god,
what is he's like, I'm the guy with the crossbow, and it's like, it again, it just feels like so unearned, because you're just like, I don't know who you are. Like, is this supposed to mean something to me? You've been in the movie for like 3 minutes total, and this is like your second speaking line, and both of them have been about your crossbow. Like, I don't care.
See, how you felt about Dopey's thing was how I felt about that guy. Man kept repeating the line, didn't have a crossbow the whole time, and then he gets one, and I'm like, is that the guy's arc?
Yeah,
he got like, a crossbow from the arm. What?
Yeah.
And then the dwarves are like, just, they're gone for the rest of the movie, and then they just show up at the end when the queen seems already defeated. I was like, I'm sorry, what was the point of them being here?
Yeah, it's obvious, I think, to me, and maybe I'm wrong, but it seems so, like, that there were too many hands in the cookie jar, and, like, somebody had an idea of, like, we're going to do this, and then, I don't know if it was Disney or some executive or somebody else came in and was like, well, let's just change this and do this, and, like, it just felt like there was too much that was kind of like not really tied up well, too much that like was kind of unnecessary, but also felt like it needed more development. Like with the thieves, I feel like you could have either cut them out or given us like 10 or 15 more minutes of like, this is who these guys are. And this is like,
yeah,
like their characters and this is where they come from. And like, I mean, like the crossbow guy, does he have a name, or is he just like crossbow guy? I don't even know.
I don't even remember if they gave, I don't know if they gave any of the thieves a name.
They gave Jonathan a name, and which the prince in the original is unnamed. So I guess they wanted to like, I don't know. I guess they wanted a name, but like when they said Jonathan, it was almost kind of funny because it just feels like such a like standard like name. I don't know, like it was just like, yeah, of course this dude's name's Jonathan.
I felt like it worked as like, that seems like a typical prince name in a movie kind of thing.
Yeah, okay,
that's the only reason why I didn't complain too much about it. I was like, oh, it's Jonathan again. I didn't even know if the prince had a name or not in the original.
He was unnamed in the original. I mean, yeah, in the original he's barely in it. He's really like, he only exists really as like this like plot device to True Love's kiss. But like I said, like he and Snow White, I don't think ever talk to each other before or after that scene. So it's like, I don't know, like whatever.
Yeah. I think honestly, like, and I don't know if there's anything else, if you have some thoughts that you want to talk about this movie. I think honestly, my big thing by the end of this movie was, and it was weird because they began it to me with the best part, which is that new song, and they ended it with it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I've heard a question before. It's like, is it better to start good and end bad, or start bad and end good in a movie?
Interesting.
And honestly, I've heard that question before, like which one is better. And for me, it's like this movie started good and it like ended on a really good, no pun intended, note.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the movie just, it was the best way I could put it, my like one word answer of like, if someone were to ask me how was Snow White, it was fine.
Yeah, it was
fine, and it could have been a lot better. The director, I don't know if you knew this, is Mark Webb.
Yeah,
who directed The Amazing Spider-Man and Amazing Spider-Man 2, which I think that had a lot of cooks in the kitchen in that one, so I don't think that's fully his fault.
Yeah.
But I think he also directed a very well-known, loved one, 500 Days of Summer. I think that's
I haven't seen 500 Days of Summer, but it's seems to be well-regarded.
So, yeah, you got a good director, and it just, I honestly think a lot of the changes came when they released images, when they released, like, people were released images, and when people were being interviewed and said things they probably shouldn't have.
Yeah. Yeah, and like the images of the CG characters is interesting, because now that you say that, like, I hadn't really thought about it until this point, but like, how many movies have come out or are coming out like in the last, I don't know, 5 years where like there's been a teaser and everyone's like, whoa, this looks really bad, and then they have to like go and change it. Like, I know Sonic was the big one.
And yeah, then, and even that was just one character change. The rest of the movie, I think, was the same.
Yeah, the movie was fine. Like, it was one character design. But now, like, the new Shrek teaser that's coming out a couple weeks ago, and like, it's kind of having the same reaction where people are like, this looks terrible. Why did you change the way this guy looked?
Yeah, and I both like reacted weird to it, and then also was like, eh. Like, I kind of got over it after a minute. I guess I didn't care enough. Like, I was like, that looks weird. Oh, well. Like, it to me, just looked like the animation, I guess, had modernized a little bit more, which could be a bad thing. I mean, some movies that have more modern animation doesn't look as good. I will say, though, stuff like Despicable Me, whether you love the movies or not, the animation just keeps getting better and better. The way they look, how they shoot action, all that kind of stuff, in my opinion.
I do have one other thing that I want to talk about with Snow White. And this one might be controversial. Not in the same way that the rest of the film is controversial. But I want to talk about Snow White as a Christ figure. And how movie, like, as many problems as I have with this movie, the more that I've thought about this movie, and I've had like a week now to like sit in my thoughts about this movie, the more that I'm like, is this film kind of sharing the gospel in like a roundabout way? So hear me out on this, all right? So Snow White, she starts as like child of the king. She then like very quickly becomes like kind of this like average peasant, low class person. But she's also like, so then she gets kind of banished from the castle, and then she's like, she gets with all of these like thieves or whatever, these like kind of average people that she's kind of rolling with. She's advocating for like the poor and the powerless. She's, she's killed. She rises again. And then, but then it's after she like comes back to life that like, that it goes from like, okay, maybe this is some like accidental thing, to where I'm like, I don't know if they're trying to do something on purpose here or not. Because like, she continues to like advocate for like the poor and powerless people, and she's going before the queen, and like, she knows them all by name, and like, that's a big part of the movie. And then she says the line, she talks about how she like wants them to be in her father's house. Like, she says specifically her father's house. And I was like, that's such a like specific wordage that just, that can't be accidental. Like, I don't feel like you could back your way into that. I don't know. Maybe you can, but like, it's such a specific, the language is so specific that I was like when she said that line, she said like, you know, my father's house. Like, I turned to like Ashley and I was like, interesting. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't, what are your thoughts on that? Did you pick up on any of that?
I'll be honest. I did not pick up on Snow White being like a Christ-like figure. I will say this to go along with your interesting theory.
Humoring me on my random. Yeah.
I'm definitely humoring you because I didn't see that. But with all the things you said, I get what you're saying. I will say this. In cultures nowadays, I mean, there's all kinds of messianic figures mentioned. I mean, look.
Sure, yeah.
Look at one of the biggest things that's recently popped up. Not as good of a messianic figure, but like Dune.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
Like, there's this prophecy of like a person coming to save them all, except he's... Anyway, that's a whole other thing. But like, but there's that. I mean, even I was hearing this one day before of if you look at different religions, all of them regard Jesus as at least a good man.
Yeah.
They all want to take parts of it, but none of them want to acknowledge him as the Son of God, the true Savior. So I will say this. Of course, there's, I think, elements of that. I think there's, though, enough differences where it's not trying to be that at all. I get what you're saying.
I don't.
And I get.
I was going to say, like, I don't think I would make the case that they were trying to do it.
Right.
But, like, I don't know. There's a lot of, I mean, there are a lot of films that I really love that are definitely not trying to be spiritual that I think there can still be spiritual elements to. And it feels really weird to say that maybe Snow White's a spiritual film because I really don't like much of it. But it was like, just one of the things as I was thinking about this film, I was like, I kind of started thinking about that and I was like, I don't know, the pieces kind of started to fall together in my mind. And I was like, this is really fascinating that you've got all of these elements of like, and almost none of that is original to the story. Like it's none of that is from the original. Like all of this is new stuff that they're adding in, except for the like dying and coming back thing. But she does it in a much more like, in the original, it's like she dies and then she comes back and it's true love, happily ever after. But in this one, like she comes back and like, there's like a mission and it's like, now I have to like reconcile the people of this kingdom.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, it's just like, the more I've thought about it, the more I'm like, that's just really fascinating that that's the direction that they took, whether intentional or not. I think probably unintentional, but still, I don't know. This is interesting. Worth talking about.
Well, no, I think and you know, we talked about how we wanted to talk about like why we loved movies and got into movies. I think one of the things that's beautiful about movies is movies can be a great ministry tool.
Yeah, absolutely.
And whether you look at exact correlations to scripture, like The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe of Chronicles of Narnia, to you know, to stuff like this, or even like, I would even say movies that have themes that specifically deal, like, you know, you mentioned Sonic.
Yeah.
To me, the reason I love all those movies, but the thing I love about like the recent one was there's a theme of what happens when you let things fester and revenge begins. Like, and there's a line where one of the characters says, like, you didn't let it change who you were in here, talking about in your heart. And there are beautiful things you can find that. So I agree with you that there are definitely some undertones of that. Definitely, I don't think that they intended for it.
Yeah.
One of the frustrating things I actually have about the end of the movie, that even though it's a beautiful scene that she's trying to bring everybody together and they're even singing that song again, the issue is they said at the beginning that, like, people had forgotten even who Snow White may have been.
Yeah.
And when they said that, I had heard about that in a review or something, but it's like, I was like, okay, they forgot. Okay. But maybe they actually do. And there's like one person there that's grown up that was given a crown by Snow White that makes sense. Oh, why she remembers. But everybody starts to follow behind her. I'm like, I'm sorry, did you guys all remember her? So it was the line that was said at the beginning of me. So it almost felt like
there's definitely, like, again, it kind of comes back to the, like, it feels like there's some emotional moments that aren't earned. Like, it.
Yeah. the girl coming and seeing her and having the, even the crown in her hand, like, she's always remembered Snow White. Like, I love that she was the one that began falling. But it's like everybody else, that, like, there wasn't a moment of realizing, like, even having those moments where they're looking at her like, who is she? And then they, maybe like after she takes her cloak off or whatnot and the girl is already falling behind her, maybe they realize who it is. But there was none of that. It just was a, oh, we got to get to the end. Okay. They all know who she is. Wait, but you have to erase that line then if that's the case. So I don't know. I just, I have a problem with that.
Yeah, but, that's fair.
But yeah, no, I think that that's something that's a little annoying to me, but I get what you're saying. There are definitely some undertones. I think that's in a lot of movies. But yeah, it's one of those things where for me, I wasn't thinking about that, but I get where you can come to those conclusions. And look, if someone uses this movie to share the gospel and someone comes to know Christ, all glory to God in that.
That's not funny, but it is funny because this movie is so not good and there's so many better ones probably, but it does have a surprising, like, I think at least there's like a surprising element of the gospel underneath somewhere in there.
which is crazy. So crazy.
All right. I think we've just about exhausted, at least for me, we've exhausted everything that I have to say about Snow White. I don't know if you have anything else to add.
No, I mean, again, my final thoughts are is it was fine, and I was just ready to give my score on it and that. So. Well,
that's a great segue, Jake. What would you give Snow White out of 10?
So with everything I've said, there are some good things about it. There are some frustrating things about it. There are some things that I really just don't like about it. And I would have to say out of 10, I would probably give it a 5.
Okay.
I think that there's enough there where it's not like on the low end of the spectrum, but it's still just not enough to be a good movie.
It's just it's just okay, like you said earlier.
Yeah, and that's the frustrating thing, because you and I told you, like, and you and I both, I liked it maybe a little bit more than you did, but that opening, like, I think the opening, oh, last thing, real quick. The reason why she's called Snow White was she was born in a winter storm. Sorry, that's stupid. Anyways.
Well, yeah, that was, we don't have to get back into this, but that was like a direct, it almost felt like a direct, like, reference to all the people that were like, but she's not like a white American person playing this character, so she can't be Snow White. And it felt like Disney was like directly talking to that group of people.
Yeah.
And
I just give whatever. A better reason for just give a better reason for why she's called Snow White. I didn't even care that it was Rachel Ziegler playing her. Just give a good reason. Like, it just...
I almost would have preferred if they just didn't mention it at all.
Right,
But, yeah.
Born in a storm. What?
All right, so you gave it a 5 out of 10. I think I would give it a 3 out of 10. It is not the worst movie I've ever seen. It's not even probably the worst Mark Webb movie I've ever seen, but it is just, it's on the bad side of average for me. And that 3 out of 10 is where I'd give it. And I would probably give the original like either a 5 or a 6 out of 10. Like, it doesn't do a lot for me, but I have a much easier time respecting the original because it was the first. It was the first feature-length animated film that Disney ever made and like, really ever came out. And so, it basically, created the path for all animated movies, after it to say, oh, yeah, this is a legitimate way to make a movie that's not just, the silly symphonies or whatever Disney was doing before that. Like, this is actually, you can actually have kind of serious stuff happen in a movie, even though it's mostly whimsy. It's still she dies and then comes back. Yeah. That's pretty dark and pretty deep for the first ever animated movie. So I at least have some respect for it, even if I don't love to watch it. It's it's interesting enough as a monumental landmark film of both animated film history and also just film history in general. So 5 out of 10 for me on the original, 3 out of 10 for me on the remake. Jake, I want to ask you, what else, have you seen anything else lately that you want to talk about briefly here before we move into our next segment?
I've seen a couple of things, recently. We talked before we started the podcast. We talked about the mystery movies that they do at theaters. And the first one I ever saw as a mystery movie, I'm not even going to go into because I made a YouTube video of my 2024 movies, and
which everyone should go check out. By the way, it's a great video.
Oh, thanks, I appreciate it. I'm not even going to go in. I'm not even going to name it. It's just awful. But this one that I saw at a Regal, the last one I saw before that was at an AMC, but this one I saw at a Regal was called Last Breath.
Okay.
Which I don't know if you've seen. It has Woody Harrelson, Simu Liu, who plays Shang-Chi, and the other guy who's the main focus of the movie. I don't I don't know what else I've seen him in. I'll be honest, I think he was like the younger version of one of the of Dom's brother in Fast 9.
Yeah, that's I'm looking at it now. Finn Cole is the name of the actor. Yeah. And he was in Fast 9, so that's great pull. So
but honestly, like, you don't really get to see much of him in that one, right? Yeah. You don't get to see him being this the with so much acting stuff. I thought he did fine in that movie. In Last Breath, he also doesn't have a lot to do because of the aspect of the true events. Long story short, it's about a guy who I think was he's a deep sea diver. They have to do work under the ocean on these specific pipes all around the ocean and such. And he literally was under the water for, I think, like over 30 minutes without air. Okay. Without air.
Okay.
And it's like, oh. And I actually thought it was really good. It's a very small movie. It doesn't have a lot of actors in it, but the people they do, they really keep the intensity up. And they do a good job with it. And I think the guy who directed the movie, I could be wrong. I know there's a documentary out there, but I think he also directed the movie.
Yeah, you're correct on that. No, I'm looking at that now, yeah.
And he did a good job, and I think they intermingled a little bit of footage from the real thing to the movie, and it worked well. Like, I thought they did a great job with that. So overall, I think that was a really good one. I recently got Angel Studios stuff for like a free month or something like that. And I rewatched a movie called Homestead. It's fine. It feels like a pilot to a TV show, which it basically was. And the whole show's not even out yet. It was pretty good. I like that it felt very realistic to our time now.
Yeah.
Almost becomes like a post-apocalyptic kind of thing, and based off certain books too, apparently.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember what else. Of like movies I saw another Christian film on there that was fine. it's based on true stories, and to me, usually those are the best ones, in my opinion. Yeah. Are the ones that are based on true stories because they have a real connection to life in general. Man, I'm trying to think of what else in recent time. I watched The Electric State.
Did you? Okay, well, we can talk about this briefly because I also watched The Electric State, so.
I'd seen just all the bad stuff about it. First off, they shouldn't have. Even the director said it was a bad business model, but why are you participating in it if it's a bad business model? Anyways, but like, the Netflix gave the Russo brothers and the writers of the Avengers movies, both of them worked together, which was great, to do this movie. I actually thought it was a pretty good movie. I don't remember everything about it. I didn't love everything about it. I thought it was just good. Like, I didn't love it so much that I need to watch it five times over. I didn't hate it so much that I never will watch it again. I thought it was good overall, and they had enough like emotional stuff to it that grabbed me. I thought the visually it looked awesome. I would have loved to have seen that in the theater. In terms of like visual wise, it just looked really good. Everybody makes fun of Chris Pratt. I like Chris Pratt in movies regardless. I haven't watched all of it, but he has a show on Amazon called The Terminal List that I would love to watch all of.
Okay.
But it looks like he gives like a really serious, like military like performance, and I want to watch it because I think there's like two seasons out, but I think he's a good actor. And forget what everybody says. I loved him as Mario. So I like that movie.
What would you give Electric State out of 10? Just curious.
Out of 10. I won't give it up to 7.5, but I'd probably give it a 7.
7 out of 7, 10.
It was good. Okay. It was good.
I also saw The Electric State. It did not work for me as well as it worked for you, I guess. I don't like Chris Pratt very much. Chris Pratt falls into the same category for me as I think The Rock, where it's really hard to watch a movie with Chris Pratt and not think about the fact that I'm watching a movie with Chris Pratt in it. Like, I never see him playing a character. I always see Chris Pratt. I don't know if that makes any sense to you, but like, It's the same way as The Rock for me. Like, when I see The Rock in a movie, I'm like, oh, it's The Rock. Like, it's not, he's not playing a character. He's just The Rock. And, yeah. And so, yeah, not a huge Chris Pratt fan. And Millie Bobby Brown also, like, not a huge fan. But, yeah, so The Electric State, it didn't do much for me. I think I would give it a 2 out of 10. I think I liked it less than Snow White.
And this is why this show is called Multiple Takes.
Yeah, and that's what excites, at least for me, is what excites me about this show. Because Jake, you and I don't agree on much when it comes to film takes, which is exciting. I love talking with somebody who has different reactions to things than I do. Because if we had the same reaction, the show would be really boring, I think.
Yeah, and I think it gives, too, like a good thought of like, oh, I never thought you thought of it like that. Like if a movie I recommend, I love it, and you're like, I just didn't like it. I'd be like, I understand that, but this is the reason why I liked it. Like,
You know? We can talk about what works and what didn't. And yeah, for most films, we will probably cover the entire spectrum probably, because from what we've found, just casually talking about movies, that you and I, we our opinions go in different directions very often. So that's exciting.
So, what about you, Graham? What movies have you seen in recent times?
I saw The Electric State, as we talked about. I went and saw. I also had a mystery movie. So you go and see your mystery movies at Regal. I go and see mine at the Alamo Drafthouse. So sometimes we might get the same ones when we see them, but oftentimes probably not.
I feel like the Alamo Drafthouse is the bougie
movie theater chain. Maybe so. Maybe so. But. Yeah, we like the Alamo. We're lucky to live in a town that has one. And we saw last night, we saw Luckiest Man in America. And it's about, this guy, Michael Larson, who in the mid-80s went on a game show and won like $100,000 because he like memorized the pattern of the, like, it's like a, I don't know, like a roulette machine kind of thing game. And he like memorized the pattern or whatever. And so it's this movie about that. And it did a pretty good job of taking what should have been a really like, I mean, that's something that's like a 20 minute newsreel. That's not really like,
Or a documentary.
Yeah. It doesn't, I don't know that it feels like there's 90 minutes worth of content there, but it did a pretty good job of like, the movie kind of just takes place like over the course of the game show, basically, and it does a pretty good job at like keeping it interesting, and you kind of get thrown into like all of the different people that are involved, whether it's the guy playing Michael Larson or like the CBS executives who are like freaking out because they realize like this guy's figured out the game and he could keep going as long as he wants to and just like take all of their money. And so, like, it's kind of this, like, back and forth, like, kind of drama thriller thing of, like, what's going to happen next? Yeah. Is he going to keep winning? Or, like, what are they going to do? Are they going to, like, pull the plug on the show? It's pretty good. Got some good performances.
Paul Walter Hauser, how was he? He's the main guy. Yeah,
I think Paul Walter Hauser is really good as an actor. Everything I've ever seen him in, he has been probably the best part of everything I've seen him in. And he is no exception. That is no exception here. He's pretty good. I love the way that the film looks. It's got a real like kind of 80s glow to it that just like I love, and it's got a lot of style. It feels really cool. So give it like a 7 out of 10. It's a pretty good movie. I think it comes out this week or next week, but it's not playing everywhere. I think it's kind of a limited release. So if you're near it, go check it out because it's pretty solid.
Nice. Is that all the one recently?
That's all in terms of what I've seen in theaters. I did watch my favorite cinema YouTuber, CineJake, released the top films of 2024. And if you guys haven't watched it, I definitely recommend going and checking that video out. And I watched the other day, I watched his number one movie. And I don't want to spoil what it was because everybody should go watch that video. But I did watch his number one movie of the year, and I thought it was pretty good. So. Go check out that.
I'm trying to remember what the number was. I think I do remember now. Movie that deserved a lot more than it got.
So. Yeah, it was pretty good. I had a pretty good time with it. It was all right. Okay, so we've talked about what we've watched recently. Now I want to move into talking about kind of the next part of this podcast. So in weeks to come, we will be at the end of every episode, starting with the end of this episode, we'll be recommending a film or a set of films for each of us to watch, and we'll take turns. So 1 week I'll do it, 1 week Jake will do it. We'll recommend a film, and then we'll come back on the next episode and watch it. Because this is the first episode, and we don't have a film recommended to us, Jake, I wanted to talk about, as a way to like kind of continue to introduce ourselves to our new lovely audience, talk about the films that have impacted you, like kind of as you're growing as a person and like shaping your love for cinema, like films that have impacted you at different points in your life, films that you loved when you were like a little kid, films that you liked when you were a teenager. Like, talk about like your journey of loving films and cinema. So
so for me, I mean, growing up, and I asked a friend of mine like in recent months if they remembered me being a big movie fan, even like in middle school, and they're like, yeah, I think I remember being that. And it's interesting because I grew up, I think, watching movies all the time. For me, a little bit about me, I have two brothers who are autistic, and they're twins. And we always had something on the house, especially to keep their minds occupied and everything. And I saw all the movies, I felt like, growing up and stuff. But it was interesting because even my parents introduced movies to me. I remember my dad, this was years ago, but he had shown me The Ballad of Jonesy Wells, which I think it's a Western. Okay. And it's a pretty good movie. And then I remember even my mom had on what was it called? A Rear Window.
Oh yeah.
Like these older movies that are like really good and classics. But I wouldn't have seen without my parents. And so those, but also growing up with Star Wars, I think the first Star Wars movies I saw were the prequels. And then I saw the originals that, in my opinion, are actually good. I watched, I grew up with those kind of movies. I even grew up, my mom showed me, she would watch it with me. So she could skip through parts, but like I because my dad was a big car guy, like they had the Fast and Furious movies in the house. But she'd put it on, like the second one, I remember, and like we'd have the racing scenes mainly the entire time with all.
Yeah.
I remember even too, this is gonna be a funny story. Love my mom. She had a movie that she would always put on that for some reason would just make me fall asleep, like it would make me go take a nap.
Okay.
And she never had to worry about it because for some reason it was the movie that got me to go to sleep. And it was, and I would say, Mom, is this the motorcycle movie? Like I would say it like that. Because all I saw was the beginning and the end. Where the guy comes in on the motorcycle and the guy in the motorcycle. And if you don't know the movie, Graham, I don't know if you're gonna guess it, but it has a guy named Matthew McConaughey. It has a Keith Urban song, I think, at the beginning or end. And the movie is How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
Wow, that's incredible. So, like, what age are you when you're watching this movie?
Oh, gosh. Like, and I don't even know. I think it was, like, I had to have been, it had to have been, like, before I was 10 years old.
That's funny.
Like, it was, like, I was taking a nap on the couch. I remember that. But like, yeah, I would not even see them. I remember when I grew up and watched this movie, I'm like, man, I'm so glad that I took naps during this.
I was going to say, like, that's such an indictment of a movie that it's the movie that your parents would use to put you to sleep. Like, that's terrible.
well, no, I think the reason why I think my mom, I don't know why she decided, but like for some reason, I'm sure that she was always a mom that was like, hey, you know, let's just check and make sure he's not awake when, you know, but I would literally be, I guess, asleep the whole time.
Wow.
Like, I think I would remember like one scene in between, but it was always some random thing that I didn't know, like there was nothing bad going on. And so I remember that. And I'm trying to think, like, movies, like, especially, like, when I really, really got into them. You know, I have some shared experiences with my dad. We saw Ford v Ferrari, which was a great, great movie. The first time I watched a movie that was, like, nominated for an Oscar, and I was like, yes, please, give it. Like, it's really good and really well done. And it was a shared experience with my dad. He got to tell me more of the true story that he knew about Carroll Shelby and all those things. And so there's a lot of shared experiences I have with people, friends of mine, you know, even like, you know, in high school, as we all probably have, like, dates I would go on with someone, like, of I remember that shared experience of a movie that we watched. And it's really cool. But I think as time has gone on, especially from college forward, it's really been, especially in these, like, I guess that would be the last 7 to 10 years kind of thing of, like, really getting involved in loving movies and watching movie news way too much. And, and you know, there's a point where I even loved I loved to know all these things so much. I knew when every Marvel movie was coming out. And it was really cool. But at the same time, we talked about this earlier. I love that movies can be used to be a ministry tool. Movies are a beautiful thing. They can be a bad thing too, but they can be used in such a beautiful way. And you know, we'll probably talk about it some point on the podcast, but look, there's some bad, bad, bad Christian movies out there.
Yeah.
But there are some that, like, have really good scenes. I mean, I know there's one you introduced me and many of the team to.
I know what you're going to say.
I won't take your thunder. You'll share it later, probably. But that movie, like, has a really great scene in it. Like, there are scenes that are just beautiful in these things. And I, like I said earlier, the best ones to me are the ones that tell true stories. I love I Can Only Imagine. It's a movie that, to me, had great acting, a great story to tell, and could have been just a cheesy, crappy fest of a movie. But to me, it was beautiful. And then I heard recently they're making another one. I'm like, why are you going? Like, come on.
A sequel?
Why are
you getting...
And literally it's called that. But
They
even tell the reason why they're doing it is there was a song that Bart Millard wrote later in life called Even If, which is a powerful, beautiful song. But it was when he was a father. So this first movie that was about him and his abusive father, now he is a father and talking to his kids and the dealings with that. And I'm like, man, I can't wait to watch that because you actually give a point. Like, there's a beautiful story to tell there now and a precedent for it being a sequel and to do it again. So I'm curious to see how all that stuff goes. But yeah, that's the biggest thing for me. Like, I just love movies that they tell stories, kind of like when I grew up with country music. The thing I loved about the stuff I grew up with, at least, was the ones that told stories and had a purpose in them. So I think that's why I love movies, is you can really tell some beautiful stories and even just have ones that just make you laugh, that you have fun with, some dumb ones too. So
yeah, so
that's me.
So for me, like, it's funny you mentioned that you had a movie that, like, your parents would put on to, like, make you go to sleep. I remember, like, well, I don't remember, but I'm aware that when I was, like, a baby, I think a lot of people have this, especially, like, people that are our age back, like, before streaming, where, like, you watched what you owned, and, like, that was, I mean, you had what you had, and, like, if a kid would find a movie that, like, he liked, like, parents would just play it over and over. And so for me, like, when I was a baby, apparently my parents used to play The Jungle Book for me, like, over and over and over, and I don't think I've seen it since I've become a conscious adult, or, like, a conscious person. Oh, like, goodness. I couldn't tell you. Like, I'm vaguely aware of, like, the characters in the movie and, like, some of the songs, but I couldn't tell you the first thing about the plot of that movie. It's one that I might recommend us watch at some point on the podcast, because it was apparently really a important film in my, like, very early life, but I have no idea. I don't remember anything about it. The first movie that I remember, like, as a conscious child, like, that I would have said maybe was my favorite movie was The Love Bug. My grandparents had The Love Bug on VHS, and so, like, my cousin, who's a few years older than me, he'll still kind of give me a hard time that, like, every time we were over at grandma's house, I was just, like, the little baby that was like, I want to watch The Love Bug. But, like, that movie was one of my favorite movies, like, or probably was my favorite movie. I mean, when I was like 5-6 years old, I probably would have said that was my favorite movie. And I watched it actually just a couple weeks ago, and that movie still rocks. I still love that movie. And then, like, I think, like, the next, like, set of movies that I would have said was my favorite would have been Star Wars. And I was trying to think, like, when I was thinking about this, like, the order in which I was introduced to Star Wars. And I'm almost certain that I probably played Star Wars video games before I saw any of the films.
Really?
And I was okay. I was trying to remember, like, where was I? Like, what house did we live in? Like, what part of my life? Where was I when I saw, like, A New Hope for the first time?
Mm.
And I was trying to remember, but I definitely think it was after I definitely played, I think, some Star Wars video games. So, like, Star Wars Starfighter was one of the first video games I had. And then possibly even Lego Star Wars. I might have played it before I saw. I definitely played it before I saw Episode 3, because the game came out before Episode 3 came out, which is kind of crazy to me to think about.
Oh, that's crazy.
But, yeah, so, like, and then seeing, like, the original trilogy and, like, my dad showing me that as a kid and, like, just falling in love with that. And there definitely was probably, I mean, from the age of, like, 10 until I was probably, like, well into high school. I mean, if you'd asked me what my favorite movie was, I would have said Star Wars probably, or, like, if some capacity, like, that was my favorite series. I loved this. I loved the original trilogy, but I also, like, I loved the prequels, and now as an adult that has seen a lot more movies, I can appreciate that the prequels are not exactly masterpieces of cinema, but they still hold a special place in my heart. And of course, I think the original trilogy actually are masterpieces and just, like, excellent films.
Yeah.
And then, like, for me, it was, I remember being in high school, and, like, up until this point, I don't know that I would have said that I was, like, a big movie guy. Like, I had watched I would watch movies here and there, like, the ones that were, like, relevant kind of culturally. Like, so I'd seen, like, a lot of the Avengers movies and stuff like that. And, like, I was kind of aware of what was kind of going on, at least in terms of the big stuff. But then I remember being in high school, and I got my first smartphone when I was a junior in high school, and I got my driver's license, and my parents let me buy a smartphone. And having, like, you know, unlimited access to the internet, which is always a dangerous thing for a high school boy. But like, for me, the thing that I, like, remember was I then had unlimited access to just watch whatever movie I wanted to watch. And I didn't have to worry about, like, whether or not my parents wanted to watch it or whether or not I was allowed to watch it. Like, and so then it was like, I want to kind of find the, like, craziest, most gory language, whatever. Like, I'm just going to lean into, like, you know, I mean, and so some of that was, like, what my friends, like, the people that I went to school with were watching. And I started to watch a lot of, like, I remember watching a lot of, like, kind of classic 90s cinema. So, like, Quentin Tarantino, which every high school kid that I was around was, like, loved Tarantino. And so I was like, I got to know what's going on. So, like, Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs and Kill Bill. And then, like, but also, like, The Big Lebowski and American Beauty and Seven and just, like, all these movies that, like, kind of then opened my eyes to, like, whoa, there's a lot more movies out there than, like, what I had been exposed to, which was, like, kids movies and animated films and
popcorn movies.
I mean, like, I had seen, like, Jurassic Park and, like, Transformers, but this was, like, these were films that, I don't know, there was way more to them than, like, this is just gonna be a fun time, you're gonna see some stuff blow up. Like, there's, like, themes and, like, allegory and, like, I don't know, there's just way more to it. And it kind of opened my eyes to, like, okay, maybe there's way more to, like, this whole movies thing than I realized. And, like, there's stuff out there that is way more interesting and makes you think on a deeper level than, yeah, like you said, like, the popcorn movies. And at the same time, I had one of my best friends was really into Studio Ghibli movies. And he started, like, anytime I'd go over to his house, he'd be like, we're going to watch this. And I was just like, I was just kind of on, like, along for the ride. And so, like, yeah. I remember watching Castle in the Sky for the first time and just being like, this is so good. Like, why have I never seen anything like this before? And then, like, Princess Mononoke and Kiki's Delivery Service and Spirited Away and all these movies. And then about that time, yeah, it was my junior year of high school, 2013, was when The Wind Rises, which was supposed to be Miyazaki's last film. It was not, but it was supposed to be. And it was like about to come out. And so I'd just recently gotten into all these movies. And so me and my friend went and saw it in the theaters. And I think I saw it twice. And we had to drive all the way across town to see it in this like little art house theater because it was the only one that was showing it. And like it changed, like it blew my mind. And at the time, like I was, and even today, like it was my favorite movie, still is my favorite movie ever. And yeah, just like incredible. And it's a movie that I loved it then when I was 16 years old, and now 12 years later, it has like, it's taken on a new meaning for me. And every time I watch it, like I get something different out of it, and it speaks to me in a different way. And we talked a little bit about like movies that aren't spiritual, but you can have a spiritual experience or a spiritual reaction from. Yeah. That's definitely one of them that like, yeah, that like the older I get, the more that I see God in this movie. That's definitely not a Christian movie and not about God in any way, but like I can, like I see, he shows up in the movie for me in a way. I don't know if that makes any sense, but like, yeah, it's just really, really powerful. It's definitely one that we'll talk about on the show at some point. So I don't want to give away too much, but, yeah. So The Wind Rises, probably my favorite movie, of all time. And then like getting into college and just kind of continuing to discover that like there were way more movies than what I was aware of. And like, so going back and watching, I mean, I spent a lot of my college slacking off at classes so I could watch movies. And, I mean, I would watch like classic silent films from like Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton. And I would watch like Westerns, and I would watch like Hitchcock and Kubrick and all this stuff. And like just trying to absorb like everything that I could, because I was just amazed that there's so many movies out there that exist that I wasn't aware of and that are like incredible. And yeah, so that's kind of my film journey. There's also a part of me that loves, you talked about the bad Christian movies, man. I love a good bad Christian movie. There's nothing I love more than seeing Ja Rule recite Song of Solomon in a film. For those of you who are playing along at home and somehow aren't aware of the masterpiece that is I'm in Love with a Church Girl, starring Ja Rule and Adrienne Bailon, let me recommend that film to you. It's, what's the opposite of a masterpiece, Jake? but also it's like, it's hilarious, and it has its moments of like, wow, there's actually something good here and something kind of spiritual here maybe. But
yeah,
most of it's pretty funny and comically bad. Yeah, so I do love a good bad Christian movie. I've seen plenty of them. And yeah.
Yeah, if we did a whole thing on the God's Not Dead franchise, the fact that it's called a franchise is...
Yeah.
It's weird. That was the movie, that first one was the movie that got me into finding Christian films. Good and bad ones.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, still finding those, which I'm grateful for. I'm still grateful for that. But yeah, man, that's a rough series, because there's good potential, bad execution.
yeah. So, yeah, we may talk about God's Not Dead at some point in the future for sure.
I will say, yeah, I love what you said about like your journey in that. Like, I think to me, some of the movies that are some of my favorites are ones that were surprises. I mentioned Ford v Ferrari. Yeah. One of my favorite movies, and we've talked about that. I would probably recommend it one time, but like The Big Year, which is Black, Steve Martin, Owen Wilson, such an interesting group of cast members there. but actually is one of those movies that when you talk about like experiences that it gave you, that's one of those movies that like I see people that it's like based on a book, but it's based really on people's lives, not specifically one person, kind of based on different people's lives, because the book is like a amalgamation of people who are real birders that like go out and watch birds all the time. But the fact that they made a movie that had relatable characters and actually had some humor and some really actually relatable moments of family, of even like what happens when you make this thing the most important thing in your life over family, over other things. Like,
yeah,
there's just beautiful themes.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of those movies I love. And it just came on randomly. This is, I feel like, going to date me, but I don't care. It came on randomly on cable. And I said, Steve Martin, Jack Black, Owen Wilson, whoa, 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 whoa. And I pressed record because I had never heard it. I think I'd watched the trailer and I was like, this looks like a slapstick comedy. Then I watched it. It was not, but I was so glad it was. Like, it was really deep in a lot of places, too. So, yeah. I'm excited to see what we both recommend. I feel like it's going to be an interesting grouping of films.
Yeah, we're going to, yeah.
Which is a great segue. Graham, you know.
Well, before we get into that, I wanted to ask you. So I mentioned that The Wind Rises was, I think, my favorite film of all time. Do you have, like, one film that you would say is number one for you?
I mean, I mentioned The Big Year is definitely up there for me because it's just of how relatable it feels like some of those are. I mean, besides that one, though, I will say, like, over the past few years, there's just been some really good ones that I've seen. And I'm thinking on it too because
it's a hard question. Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Really, I mean, threw that on you. Big Year,
yeah, no, it's all good. The Big Year is definitely one. I mean, you know, talking about movies, I'll just say this: talking about some of my favorites from last year. You know, they're talking about a movie's movie. You know, one that came out last year that I really, really liked. That I said this a lot on my review of movies from last year,
which you should go watch, by the way.
Cine Jake Entertainment. But no, like I remember going and seeing, or not going and seeing, but watching it on TV when I was able to finally watch it, was The Fall Guy.
Yeah.
And to me, look, it doesn't need the language. It doesn't need some, there's like a couple of like little inappropriate moments, but it's like, this doesn't need to be in the movie to make this good. Taking that out, is the movie still good without that? Yes. Like, the movie is like a movie's movie. It feels like they go to a moment where they're saying, all right, I'm trying to figure out this ending. Okay. Split screen, and they literally split the screen on the movie.
Yeah, that was pretty like, cool. I liked that part.
And I'm loving how, like, the chemistry between everybody was great. I loved Winston Duke, who's just the pyrotechnic, like, stunt guy. Like, he's just there as one of the side characters, and he's great. I loved Ryan Gosling as this stuntman. Like, he played it so well.
Yeah.
Emily Blunt was great as the director, you know. Like, everybody had a role. Even Aaron Taylor Johnson, who was the worst person ever, as his character is the worst. Like, he plays the role so well, and like, it just, everybody did such a great job on that movie that when you look at like even its box office, I think it cost like 150 or something to make. I think I even have the website here to pull up, but like, it literally made only $181 million, and I think it deserved way more. Like, it was based on an old TV show, but it was basically an original kind of idea. And it was really good, really well made, and it just deserved better. So it's like one of those movies. Like, I'm not saying that's like my favorite movie now, but it's one of those movies I look back, I'm like, you know what? If I want to watch a fun movie, that's one of them. I've heard people say it's too long. Dude, that ending action stuff, I won't go into it because I know a lot of people haven't seen it, but that whole action scene made me laugh so long. I didn't care how long it went. I wanted it to keep going because it was so funny. Like, just the moment where Ryan Gosling looks at one of the characters there and goes, like, oh, because you want to kill me again? Like, it's just like, there's like, he's just yelling at him as he's driving a car around. I'm just like, this is so funny. And it's just, it's great. And it really felt like I keep saying it, the movie's movie.
Yeah.
Like, it just, it had all of those elements of even learning a little bit about the movie industry. Like, it was really cool. And it worked so well. Like, I would love to see them make another kind of movie like that. It just was really good. So yeah, that's probably one I would just say recently has just been a really good one that I really like.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was a little bit about both of us and our journeys into how we have watched films and how we love films now. So now moving on to kind of the last part of the podcast, we're going to talk about what we're going to talk about in the next podcast, give you guys kind of a sneak peek and give you guys a chance to go and watch some of the same movies that we're watching so that when you show up for episode 2, you can kind of be a part of the discussion with us. So we've decided that I will be the first one to recommend a movie for the next episode. And so for episode 2, I want us to watch Babe and Babe 2, Pig in the City.
Oh, man.
1995, Babe. It's a classic. And then Babe 2, Pig in the City, directed by George Miller, one of the legendary filmmakers of our time.
The man made Mad Max and Happy Feet, and he made Babe. This guy makes crazy combinations.
I don't want to spoil Babe, but it makes a lot of sense when you see Babe 2 that you're like, oh, yeah, I can see that. It makes sense
now. You make both of them?
He was a producer, I believe, on Babe. He was the director for Babe 2.
Oh, wow. Okay, I thought he did the first one. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, and they're very different films, but they're both related. They both have some of the same people working on it. So 1995's Babe and 1998's Babe 2, Pig in the City. We'll be talking about those on the next episode, and also we'll be talking about some new stuff that's coming out. Gamer Jake, you got anything in the theaters that you're looking forward to in the next 2 weeks?
Look, everybody's going to be talking about Minecraft. Not the Minecraft. No. It's called a Minecraft movie.
Oh, is it? I thought it was the. Okay.
Yeah, no, it's a. And they gave a reasoning for it in a video. Look, it's probably going to be one of those movies that I've heard. I haven't heard the greatest things of people who've seen it. viewers I've watched, but you know what? I'm probably going to be one of those few people that walks out going, man, that was just such a fun movie. Like, I'm looking forward to watching it because I know it's one of those movies I usually don't agree with the critics on stuff. So I'm probably going to be one of those people that like it. I hope I do. I'm going to go in with an open mind. What else we got? I'm trying to think. There's a couple of movies like coming out in weeks to come. I know right now a big thing that's going on in the movie world is CinemaCon. So there's a lot of stuff being released about upcoming movies in the next calendar year.
Yeah.
But I will say, you know, Minecraft's coming out. If you're into, it's not a movie, but it's the continuation of the show The Chosen is out in theaters. I'm trying to think of like just anything else that's coming soon.
I know I've got a couple tickets for next week. We got another mystery movie coming up on Monday, and then I talked about Studio Ghibli films, and Princess Mononoke is one of my favorites, and the Alamo's showing it on Tuesday next week, so I will be in the theater watching Princess Mononoke for what I believe is the third time or fourth time I've seen it in theaters.
I haven't seen a single Studio Ghibli film, I don't think.
Well, that sounds like a perfect excuse to recommend one for me to recommend one in the future.
What do you think your mystery movie is going to be? I think that would be a good question to ask both of us.
So are you also going to a mystery movie next Monday?
Yes, I am going to see a mystery movie next Monday.
So yours is at Regal, mine is at Alamo. They might not be the same movie. I think that the one that we're going to see, my guess is it's going to be Warfare.
Okay, so you know it's a rated R movie then.
Actually, I think it's rated PG. I think it's rated PG-13. The movie that we're seeing is rated PG-13. I don't know what Warfare is rated. I don't know if it's. It probably is R. So maybe it's not that one.
So I will say this: I think we both may be seeing the same movie.
Is yours PG-13 as well?
It is PG-13.
Okay.
And if I remember correctly, Let me look at it. The one I'm going to see, it says an hour and 44 minutes. The thing is, they never have the exact amount of runtime as it actually shows on the movies.
Yeah.
There's two movies I think it could be. One is a lot longer than it says it is, which is The Amateur, which I'm really excited to see, starring Rami Malek.
Yeah.
Hugh Jackman's in it? Okay, I didn't know that. Sorry, that was just a moment of realizing, huh? Or Drop, which I don't know if you've seen anything
I've seen the stuff for Drop. I don't know. I figured that one would be rated R, but maybe it's not.
It's PG-13.
Oh, interesting.
And it's an hour and 35 minutes. I'm looking at it right now, and it comes out a week after.
So did you say an hour 35?
Yeah.
So mine does say 95 minutes. So now that you say that's rated PG-13 and is 95 minutes, I'm pretty confident that mine's probably going to be that then.
Which I don't know if I'm really looking. I'm intrigued by it, but I don't know if I'm super looking forward to that movie. The one I am looking forward to is The Amateur.
Yeah, that one does look pretty good.
So, but I don't know. We'll see. We both may end up seeing the same movie. We both may end up seeing two different ones.
So, yeah. So, basically, for all the listeners, next episode we're going to talk about a Minecraft movie. We're going to talk about Babe and Babe 2, Pig in the City. And we're going to talk about a random movie that we see in theaters. So, go also watch a random movie in theaters, and maybe it'll be the same one that we talk about.
Yeah, if you live near where there's a Regal or AMC or Alamo Drafthouse, they probably have a mystery movie. And basically you go in and pay, I think you pay $5 in most places.
Yeah, we have season passes at the Alamo, so like,
yeah,
I don't pay anything to see anything there. I just pay like monthly, but.
Right. I think though with tax, without tax, it's $5 for each, both AMC and Regal. I know that for a fact. I don't know about Alamo, but yeah, if you get a chance, go see it. Hopefully you get a good movie and not a crappy one like I got my first.
Yeah, my last couple have been pretty good, so I'm hoping that this one will be good as well.
Last Breath was my last one, so I hope this one's good.
All right, Jake. Well, that'll be it for this podcast. I guess we'll see everybody on episode 2. Go watch Minecraft movie and Babe 2, Pig in the City.
Yes, go watch those and come back to listen to multiple takes with us. I'm Jacob,
and I'm Graham.
See you next time.
Yep. See you.